Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my co-host, researcher, minister, and friend, Charles Paisley, the founder of ChristianGospelChurch.org and the author of Come Out of Her, My People. Charles, it's good to be back and to open up with another mind-boggling podcast about the history that happened after William Branham's death. Today, we have all kinds of different things to talk about, from the birth of the charismatic movement to the O.J. Simpson trial. There's just so much here, and it's kind of a crazy history. I did not, even until recently, until I was working with you, I didn't realize how close this came to Jeffersonville. But I did realize, and it's in my book, Preacher Behind the White Hoods, obviously, that Kardashian family was connected to the Shakarian family, and they sponsored Branham. So we're going to get into some crazy good stuff here.
Right, John. You know, if our listeners remember our last few episodes, we have been working our way through the early history of the message in the years after William Branham died. You know, as you come out of 1965, William Branham died in December that year. They held his body from the grave. They finally agreed to bury him in April. And through 1966, 1967, 1968, the message is shrinking every year. It's hemorrhaging members. It's in steep decline. There's a major schism rocking the movement in those years. And it takes, I would say, 3 years for all of that to sort out and for things to kind of change. And so through that period of time, you know, the early message community right there in those years, as I've mentioned before, it was about roughly 35 churches, maybe 5,000 people, with less than half of that 5,000 being in those 35 churches. The majority of the people who believed the message back then were in non-message churches of the broader Latter Rain movement. And those were just really, really tough years. But when you come out to the other side of that, you know, you start coming in through the end of 1968 and into 1969, the decline reverses and the message begins to grow exponentially after that. And today we're going to start talking about kind of to set up to explain how that exponential growth of the message took off on the other side of those Branham's death, the fallout, and the schism that happened. And as we do that, I think today we've got to talk about the full gospel businessman, because as we've already mentioned through some of the prior episodes leading up to this, they're involved in this. They're playing a role, and they're playing an important role actually in how some of this is going to grow in subsequent years. William Branham was deeply connected to the full gospel businessman. I would say, along with Oral Roberts, William Branham was the favorite of the full gospel businessman. Okay, Oral Roberts and William Branham were the full gospel businessman's two top guys. One of the two of them headlined every major convention that they had, right? And sometimes they did it together. But it was one of them that always headlined their conventions. And William Branham was even scheduled to continue highlighting their conventions, headlining their conventions, being the keynote speaker even into 1966. Like, there were scheduled advertisements for upcoming events before he died even. And so as he died, the full gospel businessman still had connections and linkages into the message. And as I've mentioned before, quite a number of the most senior, highest level leaders of the full gospel businessman were members of the message, okay? They were part of those 35 churches that I'm talking about. They're part of that 5,000 number of people I'm talking about. And today I think we should walk through who they were. We'll just give at least some of their names, talk through some of them, explain their roles, what they did, and then kind of talk about how that led to financial support and interactions with the message community, which is going to help feed some of the growth that happens as you go into 1969 and you kind of turn into the 70s.
It's so fascinating. And keep in mind, as we're going through this, that these connections happened before Latter Rain. Branham was connected to the Shakarians and the Kardashians before Latter Rain started. And if you can put your mind onto the theatrical style of the Lateran evangelists and what actually became the charismatic movement, the theatrical style of this religion. Keep in mind that this came from the elite out in Los Angeles, where, you know, you've got the Kardashian family that have grown into an explosive media machine. Well, they saw the power and, quite frankly, the value, the financial value of these ministries. So before Lateran happened, if you go back to the historical episodes that Charles and I are doing, you find that they had, like, little David Walker was connected to Branham. Before Walker was connected to Branham, Branham was connected to these guys. And the theatrical style of that ministry, you know, little David was supposed to be able to levitate, and all these magic tricks that they had, that was part of the theatrical style of this religion. So when you think theatrics, think Kardashians, think Shakarians, and that sets the stage for everything that we're talking about.
If you go back to when the full gospel businessmen got started, William Branham was already working with those financial backers before the full gospel businessmen organized into a group. William Branham in 1947, 48, 49, he starts working with this same circle of people before they call themselves the full gospel businessmen. Okay.
Right.
He met up with them. And back then, these guys primarily were in the Foursquare denomination. You know, that Foursquare comes up a lot when we talk about all this stuff, doesn't it, John? Foursquare is where the majority of these people were back then. And if you remember, this is the Pentecostal denomination, which in the 40s was the home of most of the Pentecostal British Israelites. You know, all kinds of stuff we've talked about in prior episodes was going on there. That's where the full gospel businessmen started at, primarily wealthy people in the Southern California area, Los Angeles area, coming together. And they were initially financing William Branham, among others. Avok Hagopian was another they were financing back then. The little David Walker's campaign manager, Raymond Hoekstra, they were financing him back then, right? It's that same circle of people. And if you read through some of their literature, the full gospel businessman, Dema Shakarian specifically, claims that somewhere, I want to say about 1952, 1953, they start working with Oral Roberts. And Oral Roberts is the one who kind of suggests to them or inspires them to have the idea to turn this, what is kind of an informal group of financiers, into this organization, the full gospel businessmen. Okay. And so that's kind of how that informal group William Branham had already been working with, through some influence of Oral Roberts, turns into a formal group called the Full Gospel Businessmen, okay? And this is happening at the same time that the Voice of Healing Fellowship is being created, which will become the Full Gospel Fellowship, a denomination. So this, the term Full Gospel here aligns to several different groups who are forming at the exact same time with a similar ideology. So it's not, you've got the Full Gospel Businessmen, you've got a full gospel fellowship denomination coming together. It's all happening there in the 50s. We've talked about that. I know I covered that in my first book on message history quite a bit. But as you transition up to the point that William Branham dies, through those years, William Branham becomes almost entirely dependent on the full gospel businessmen to finance him. After he breaks with Voice of Healing and all the sanctions come from Assemblies of God and Foursquare doesn't want anything to do with him anymore as you come into the 60s. William Branham's primary source of financial sponsorship for what he's doing is coming from the full gospel businessmen. And so what's important to understand through all of that, and because William Branham was involved from the very beginning, key figures in the movement from even before they organized in the full gospel businessmen were William Branham's followers. They were part of his cult of personality. And the very first one I think we got to point out is a man named Minor Argenbright. Minor Argenbright. So Minor Argenbright was the co-founder of the full gospel businessmen. He was one of the original charter members, and he was the international vice president of the organization. He was second in command under Dema Shakarian. Minor Argenbright is from southern Indiana. He's from Georgetown, Indiana, which is about 10 miles from Jeffersonville. Okay, he's from right here in this area where we live, from right here. And so he is this international vice president. And where did his money come from? He was a he ran a very big construction company, and he built skyscrapers is what his construction company, you know, he wasn't building, you know, little houses and stuff. He was building skyscrapers, and they built numerous, you know, high-rise skyscrapers, primarily in the West Coast, but also in some other parts of the United States. And that's where a lot of his wealth came from. And he and his family, you'll find William Branham talk about him on tape a lot. He and his family were absolutely in the message. They were often in attendance at the Branham Tabernacle. And his family, the Argenbright family, is still in the message to the present day, as far as I know. I stand to be corrected, but last I knew, they are still message followers. Minor Argenbright traveled with William Branham quite a bit on some of his tours. I think most notably, Minor Argenbright was along with Frere von Blomberg, traveling with William Branham on his tours of Europe in the 50s, for example, sponsorships for as kind of the liaison to the Full Gospel businessmen. So anyways, Minor Argenbright is one of the major Full Gospel businessmen, often in attendance at the Branham Tabernacle itself, and is the international vice president and co-founder of the Full Gospel businessmen. So he's the first one I think we got to point out.
It hits so close to home, man. I'll never forget, somebody shared with me the photograph of William Branham accepting the keys to a Cadillac, which I knew he had a Cadillac. I had seen photographs of it. And but at the same time, I was programmed to believe that he would never take a Cadillac because that's what these other evangelists were doing, and he was condemning every single one of them for the cars they drove. And they shared with me that the Cadillac that was given to him by the Full Gospel Businessmen's Association, which he drove, and I had no idea at that time that the guy giving him the keys just lived, 15 miles from my house. It's not that far. So to think that this is hitting that close to home is kind of funny. But when you think of the broad scale of where this went and how, these men, the Full Gospel Businessmen, they really shaped what became Latter Rain and continued to shape the charismatic movement. Their ties are just so deep. The funding, they're tied into multiple aspects of what we have talked through in our historical research podcast. There's just so many connections. And as I mentioned, these guys are connected to the Kardashian family. They've got the financial backing of the Kardashian family. And the Shakarians themselves were very wealthy. Demas's father was, he was a milk producer or something. He had a lot of wealth. I think his name was Isaac Shakarian, and you can even hear some tribute to him in the Full Gospel Businessman's recordings. I've listened to some of those. So they had this massive financial backing of an engine. They're right here next to the Branham Tabernacle within 20 minutes drive, you can get there. And they're closely connected to William Branham, spearheading the Latter Rain revivals and the post-World War II healing revival. So this financial engine is really the platform from which everything that we talk about in all of our episodes is built upon.
The Full Gospel Businessmen, they published a magazine called The Voice. Voice magazine. Here's some examples of them. I've got a pretty sizable collection, and a lot of them can be found in PDFs online. And in most of their magazines, there's a page in here that will list all of the officers of the organization, right? So, like, we're not guessing at who these people are, you know. And someone who's been in the message, if they were in the message back in the older days, or someone that's listened to a lot of the tapes, like, if you get these and you read these names are going to, like, all jump out to you, like, oh, hey, I know them, I know them, I know them. And so if you want to just kind of fact check and see that these people really were what we're saying, you know, get one of these magazines and just look through it. So men like Minor Argenbright, too, and these others we're going to mention, they changed positions over the years, right? So they weren't always consistently vice president or treasurer or whatever. They would change positions through the years. But Minor Argenbright was vice president for, I don't know, probably 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. Another person I think that we've got to mention that was fairly notable was a man named Henry Carlson. You'll find William Branham talk about Henry Carlson on tape quite a few times. He was one of the top officers of the Full Gospel Businessmen. And if you will remember, Henry Carlson is one of only two people only two people that William Branham claimed took his side when he confronted the so-called 350 ministers up in Chicago. Remember that story where, you know, which is, we're pretty sure it's a fake or highly exaggerated story, I'll put it that way. But Henry Carlson was on William Branham's side in that row. And what was that row over? That row was over serpent seed. Henry Carlson was on William Branham's side in the fight over serpent seed, right? If you read through those quotes. Well, who is he? He was one of the top ranking, highest ranking leaders in the full gospel businessman. He was one of the officers. I think at one point he served as treasurer. I think he might have even been a vice president at one point, and he was on the board of directors certainly for a good 15 years. Even after William Branham died, he continued to be a high ranking figure. So Henry Carlson is another person that I would certainly count being in the message. His family stuck around for quite a few years, and it's possible, I don't know for sure, that his family's still in the message today, but they certainly were in the message up through the 70s and into the early 80s. Another notable one. Let me give you another one, John. So there's a man named Jewel Rose. Jewel Rose. Jewel Rose lived in Phoenix, Arizona. He's another wealthy member of the Full Gospel Businessman. You'll find William Branham talking about Jewel Rose on tape quite a bit too. He's another man who was part of the message. And he served as treasurer, the treasurer of the overall organization of the Full Gospel Businessman for, I would say, maybe 10 years, something like that. He was the treasurer. I think he might have even been their very first treasurer. He was also a member of the message. He followed the message, believed the message, was in fairly regular attendance at message churches in Arizona after William Branham moved to Arizona, and continued to be into years after William Branham died. So those are, again, two more of the top senior figures and full gospel businessmen who were followers of the message and regular attenders of message churches.
You mentioned serpent seed, which ties back to all the research that I've done on Christian identity. And this was something that was deeply embedded into the Angelus Temple. We see several people who came from the Angelus Temple who are leading Christian identity figures, key figures such as Wesley Swift, etc. Gordon Lindsay was speaking at the Christian identity conferences. We find him embedded into it. Well, one of the things that was a little bit mind-boggling to me when I began studying the Kardashian connection to all of this, learning that they were also, not only were they part of the Foursquare organization, they seemed to be very closely aligned with Christian identity. They were sponsoring key figures like Clem Davies, who was also, he was a Klansman he promoted the Klan, I should say, and he was involved in the Christian Identity conferences, sponsored him right before sponsoring Branham, who was also deeply embedded in Christian identity. So you've got all these figures that are tied together. At the same time, the FGBMI is being birthed. So we don't have a lot of the information of the early years, like 1947, but you can assume from all of the connections to Christian identity that was part of the platform from which it developed.
Yeah, those things had certainly a place in the Foursquare denomination where quite a few of these people came from. And it's hard to know precisely who held which position on what. But yeah, Henry Carlson, according to William Branham, took his side in the fight over serpent seed, you know, with the other ministers. Okay, a couple other important people worth mentioning next would be Carl and Evan Williams. So Carl Williams and Evan Williams, these are people, some of these you might have met personally, John. I know I've come across paths with a few of these people so far that we're mentioning, but Carl Williams became the treasurer after Jewel Rose of the Full Gospel Businessman. Okay, he lived in Phoenix, Arizona, that area, Arizona anyway, and he moved there, I believe, with William Branham when the Deedy cult moved out there in 1963. That's how Carl Williams ended up out in Arizona. Carl Williams may have been a member of the Deedy cult. There's certain people I'm not sure. I have suspicions, but I don't have any solid evidence. There's a good chance Carl Williams was a member of the Deedy cult. He was on the board of directors of the Full Gospel Businessman for quite a few years. And like I said, he picked up the treasurer spot after Jewel Rose stopped being treasurer. And Carl Williams continued to be treasurer of the Full Gospel Businessman into the mid-1970s, John, like all the way after William Branham had died. That's very notable. You know, the message, the Full Gospel Businessman's treasurer was still the member of the message for years after William Branham died, all right? And the way the Full Gospel Businessman worked is they would set up like local chapters in different cities or states. And the Williams became more or less the presidents or the leaders of the Full Gospel Businessman's chapter in Arizona, in Phoenix. And Carl Williams' son, Evan Williams, I believe, took that position after Carl Williams did. I believe the Williams themselves were actually from Chicago, is my recollection. You know, I'm not going to say that's 100% sure, but my understanding is they came from Chicago and they followed William Branham to Arizona when all the Didi cult moved out there in, you know, 64. So those are another two very notable. The Williams family, these are people who are still, again, to the best of my knowledge, this family is still in the message to the present day, were high-ranking senior figures in the Full Gospel Businessman, even in the years after William Branham died.
And if I remember correctly, Carl Williams was in real estate. That's where he made most of his money. These guys are connected to very, very wealthy people. So this is the financial engine. Not only was this responsible largely for spreading what became the charismatic movement, but the financial backing of most of the movement, as you get into some of the things that we're going to be talking about in future episodes, this FGBMI engine was part of the finances for most of it, part of William Branham's financing for his European trip, I believe it was, with Baron von Blomberg, as part of that. So this thing is a huge financial engine, and it attracted businessmen who were wealthy generally to these meetings so that they could help fund all of this thing.
You know, there's people out there, John, who I've seen it in the comment threads or say things along the line of, oh no, William Branham wouldn't have been staying with the Full Gospel Businessman. You know, he was on his way out and all of this. You silly, silly, silly people. No, the Full Gospel Businessman overlapped with the message. William Branham's own cult followers were not going to throw him out, okay? And the lead figures in the message were one of the major factions of the Full Gospel Businessman. He was not on his way out. He was on his way to the top. This was his chance to rebound, is what this was being set up to be. Had he not died, he almost certainly would have rebounded through this, just like Oral Roberts and A. Allen, all the other guys used this to rebound into the 70s, right? William Branham would have did the same thing. And he was set up, frankly, better than the rest of them to rebound for it, because he had more of their board in his back pocket than Oral Roberts or the rest of them did, okay? Like, that's how these things work, okay? And people are just so silly, John. I don't know what it is, you know? They probably just don't have the awareness of these things like we do, you know, because I mean, these people were in our churches. So, I mean, we know maybe in a way that they don't. So another prominent figure that you'll notice, and I should go through the books and figure out precisely when this guy got on the board. He wasn't there to begin with, but I want to say it was the late 50s, probably 57, 58. He gets on the board. Is Jack Moore, John. Jack Moore of Shreveport, Louisiana, ends up on the board of directors of the Full Gospel Businessman. And my impression is that this happened after William Branham had his big breakup with Voice of Healing, right? Jack Moore was also one of the leaders of Voice of Healing, basically. And Jack Moore is actually the fella who had helped connect William Branham via Gordon Lindsay to the Foursquare and these financiers back in 1947 and 48. Remember?
Wow, yeah.
Jack Moore was the man who connected William Branham to these guys. So he ends up on the board of directors as well. And we know Jack Moore is not someone we would call in the message. I certainly wouldn't. I would call him a Latter Rain friendly guy, a Latter Rain influenced guy. But he was certainly a very good friend of William Branham and certainly would have voted and moved favorably to William Branham. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so crazy to think of that history. I think I mentioned it in our revival history series that we did, that I came in contact with a person in the post office who had been to Jack Morris Church when William Branham was there, and he swore to me that you could do anything that you wanted in life. I think he even used the word prostitute. He said you could go out and be with prostitutes if you wanted to. He said, because we've already seen God come and leave this earth. So we're now living in the new world, the new millennium. And he was referencing Jack Morris Church, where apparently the deity cult was heavily, heavily involved, the Branham deity cult, and came back. And I mean, these people believe very clearly that that there is no need for rapture. This is the new kingdom. Jesus has came and gone, and that Jesus was William Branham.
You're exactly right. And William Branham held his last major set of meetings at Jack Morris Church before he died. Okay, he held his big meetings at Jack Morris Church in November. He died in December. This was all still there. I mean, it's not like this thing was fading that way. And that's actually the meetings where, if you remember, William Branham talked about being possessed by the demon squirrel.
Yeah.
It was at Jack Morris Church.
Yeah. Well, and there's other ties too. So William Branham is speaking at Jack Morris Church. He's nationally praising Roy E. Davis, the imperial wizard of the Klan. And Davis had his biggest, most publicized event right there in Shreveport where Jack Morris Church was. All over the newspapers, the headlines, this is the imperial wizard. They held this big, very publicized rally where they were taking newspaper reporters into the Klan rally. And I mean, all of this is in the newspapers. You can go look. I've even got on the Roy Davis page, you can read some of them on the website. Davis posed in the full Klan garb, and this is in Shreveport. Keep in mind, these these are during the years William Branham was most active in that church. So as he's mentioning Roy Davis, every single person in Shreveport is fully aware that Branham is talking about the imperial wizard of the Klan and praising him and talking about his connections to him and how Roy Davis basically ordained him and mentored him in the faith. So that's, we can't say that Jack Morris Church was in the Klan. We don't know that. They burned all the records. Otherwise, we might have some of it. But all we can say is he is just praising Davis. And Davis is one of the most public figures right there during the era in Shreveport.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
At the top tier of leadership in Full Gospel Businessmen, William Branham is, these are guys William Branham's taken on his hunting trips. These are guys William Branham is letting into his inner circle, going to dinner with. William Branham is courting these people constantly, constantly doing relationship maintenance with these people, constantly working on them for years and years and years, all the way up to the end of his life. And some of them, as a result of William Branham's courtship, have fallen in, into his cult of personality. Let's talk about next some of the junior figures in the Full Gospel Businessmen. So far, everyone I've talked about is top-tier, national-level leadership, okay? And it's not the majority of the top level of leadership, but as you can see, it is major figures. It's the treasurer. It is the board of directors, right? It's the vice president, right? It's high-ranking figures in the organization. But down through the ranks of the organization, there are lots of others too. For example, the we mentioned the Dow family, which their name is spelled D-A-U-C-H, pronounced Dow. They're the family. Their family invented corrugated cardboard, right? Very, very wealthy family from inventing basically cardboard boxes. And they're the family who basically intervened through the Full Gospel Businessman to give the endowment to keep the Branham Tabernacle afloat and try to heal the dispute that happened after William Branham died, right? The Full Gospel Businessman, though, gave endowments and financial support to quite a few message churches back in those days after William Branham died. And quite a few of the leaders back then were Full Gospel Businessmen. Banks Woods was himself a Full Gospel Businessman. We've talked about Banks Woods a few times. He owned a large construction company. That's where a lot of his revenue came from, in real estate. Fred Softman, who was absolutely a member of the Deedy cult. I would call him the leader of the Deedy cult, almost. I think that would be fair. Fred Softman, who was trustee of Voice of God Recordings, who was trustee of the Tabernacle, the William Branham Evangelistic Association, full-on Deedy cult member. He was a Full Gospel Businessman for a period of time back then. Perry Green, the Tucson Tabernacle. Perry Green was a Full Gospel Businessman. You'll even hear Perry Green liked to brag about being rich. We're going to do some full episodes on Perry Green here before this thing's over with. But Perry Green claimed, and again, you're always kind of left wondering, is it true or is it not true? Perry Green claimed that in 1964, the year he converted to the message, that he had an income that year which by inflation would translate to $750,000 a year. That's what he claimed his income was that year. Wow. And he owned a milk delivery company. He owned a travel agency. He owned a construction company. He owned something else. He said he had like seven corporations. Yeah. I mean, these guys were very, very well-to-do. There was a reason William Branham was spending his time with these guys, okay? And there's a reason he was courting them. Another really prominent one that grew in prominence after William Branham died. This man was not in the message before William Branham died, but converted somewhat after, was a man named Lonnie Jenkins. He was a Full Gospel Businessman. He ended up being sponsored through the Full Gospel Businessman also to be connected with a church in, I've been told, Lima, Ohio, and a church up there, which became a pretty important message church. He was in the Full Gospel Businessman. And another figure we've talked about a number of times who was a Full Gospel Businessman was Orlando Walker. Orlando Walker had a church in Oregon. I believe it was called Paramount Full Gospel Church. I believe that was the name of it. It was a message church. He was a Full Gospel Businessman, right? And again, the Full Gospel Businessman helped sponsor and maintain some of these churches through those years, in addition to planting other churches, which we're going to talk about as time goes on. But yeah, these are all people in the Full Gospel Businessman. I got one more I want to talk to after this, but yeah, that's quite a few people, isn't it, John? Quite a few people.
It is. And it attracted so many wealthy people. If you go through the history of all of the major connections into it. I mean, we're talking, so Bethel Church, if you go back in Bethel Church's history, you find Full Gospel Businessmen associated with the leadership in Bethel. We're talking key figures in major mega churches, and they're backed by these very, very wealthy people. And you can't help but stop and think, as you're thinking of the organizational strategy of this business, you go back and you think about the passage from, what is it, Matthew 19, I think it is, about the, it's easier for to put a camel through the eye of a needle than a rich man into the kingdom of God. Well, here's an organization that they're trying to put camels through needles all over the country, man.
You know, John, there's, okay, I'm putting on my opinion hat, okay? You wonder what's going on. You know, what is this all about? And you've been in the message, you know, as long as me, John. We were in the message for decades and decades and decades. And it seems to me that in most significant message churches, the pastor, the deacons, the senior leadership, generally, are the wealthiest people in the church. I mean, absolutely. They are business owners. They are rich one way or another. Some, and not necessarily that they got rich through the church, but being rich is what seems to be the thing that qualifies them to be deacons and senior leaders. Okay. Now, why is, I don't know why that is, from a official scientific examination sort of an answer, John. I don't know necessarily why that is, but I'm going to give you my opinion, okay? My opinion is that it goes all the way back to William Branham. These were the people William Branham wanted around him. Why did William Branham want them around him? For their money. For their money. And he gave them these positions and he put them into these spots for their money, okay? Because they were donating and financing him. And the people in the message continued the pattern that they observed William Branham doing while he was living, okay? And so to this day, you end up with the senior leaders in every church being wealthy people. And the truth is, John, I've been in message churches my whole life. Quite a lot of those people are absolute scoundrels. Absolute dirty scoundrels, John. To a T, dirty scoundrels. Some of the worst message believers. I mean, they give message believers a bad name. Some of these guys are so bad. I mean, absolute scoundrels, John. And yeah, some of I could go down names. I could tell you which ones of them are racist. I could tell you which ones of them are homosexuals. I could tell you all the adulteries they committed. And yes, they're absolute scoundrels, even according to the standards of the message. Yet there they are. Yet there they are. What in the world? Can you explain that to me, except they courted them for their money? I don't know how to explain it other than that.
I have went back in my mind going through the memories of being in the Branham Tabernacle. once I found out the money engine that's behind this thing, and see, we were manipulated to think that William Branham was such a poor person. And I'll never forget the shock that I had whenever I saw the first newspaper article saying that in these revivals, as early as 1947, it took two very husky men to carry out the boxes of money from these revivals. And then I was going back through the memory after that, and most of the men that Grandpa called on to pray, which was like this big honor in the message, before you close the service, you call on somebody to pray, and everybody just feels blessed. Most of those people were very wealthy when you really think about it. Now, did he purposefully choose the wealthy for? I don't know, but I can tell you that most of them had money.
It's so strange, isn't it? You know, so again, okay, so I'm taking my opinion hat back off, okay? And I'm going to come back, you know, to put the fact hat back on. All right, so next person on the list I want to talk about, John, is actually Orlando Walker's son, Gerald Lee Walker. And he's probably the last person I'm going to mention here. So he was still on the board of directors until the 1980s, John, in the Full Gospel Businessman, all the way up through nearly to the end of Demas Shakarian's life. And I think it would be fair to say that Gerald Lee Walker led a civil war in the Full Gospel Businessman while he was still living to basically try and overthrow Demas Shakarian. And, you know, again, there's things there you can kind of wonder about what all that was, but what I can say is, hey, the message people that were in leadership positions attempted a rebellion against Demas Shakarian in the 80s to get control of the organization. That happened. That absolutely happened. That is part of the internal politics of what happened in the 80s in the Full Gospel Businessman. Now, they failed. They did not get control. Demas Shakarian held on, right? And it ended up that the, you know, Gerald Lee Walker, and those were the guys that ended up on the losing side. But the Full Gospel Businessman went down the drains more or less after that. They lost all their influence. And what happened there? What happened there in the 80s? The Full Gospel Businessman lost all the message members of their organization. Okay? That happened in the 80s. And so that we're going to kind of set to aside. Maybe when we get to the 80s, we'll talk about that. But when you come back into the 1970s, late 60s and 70s, it's very important to remember the Full Gospel Businessmen, not the majority, not all of them, but a large faction of them, including key figures, were members of the message, attendees of message churches, close confidants in some ways to William Branham. They helped endow some of the early message churches with lots and lots and lots of money. And so, you know, it's not, I say all this, I'm not trying to say that the message controlled the full gospel businessman, right? Or that the full gospel businessman was the message. That's not the case. That's not the case. But they held, the message people held key spots in the full gospel businessman such that they were able to channel a lot of the financial resources of that organization into the message community to sponsor message missionary work, right? And so as we consider how the message expanded in its growth and how it financed that, this is one of the key ways a lot of that was financed in those very early years. The message was small. You know, as 5,000 people in 35 churches, you know, there's not a lot of, there's limited financial resources there if you think about it as they're average people. But theirs are not average people. A lot of these are super wealthy, high-ranking leaders in a organization that is loaded with money, and they're able to push those resources into the message. And a large part of the early mission work that the message did overseas was heavily subsidized by the full gospel businessmen. And some of the major message churches that grew up in North America after William Branham died did so due to large endowments provided to them by the full gospel businessmen.
You know, you mentioned Gerald Lee Walker, and it's interesting the timing of me recording this episode because I still continue to get letters about Sarah Branham, William Branham's daughter, and her disappearance, and all of the strange ties. My family had direct ties to Sarah right before she disappeared, and she was supposed to come visit my family right before she disappeared. And that research is all on hold. I still get emails. I just got one last night. I'm asking, where is Sarah? And it basically became, I'll just say it like this. It became best in our best interest to halt on that research because there are some complications and some maybe some dangers there. So we put it on hold, but I still get questions and comments about that. Well, so Gerald Lee Walker was a treasurer for the Full Gospel Businessmen. He was also the attorney for Sarah Branham. And if you look at the time in which there was this shakeup, and it looks like the message people were trying to get in bed here, during this time, he is Sarah Branham's attorney. Also, not long before this, I want to say it was maybe 3 years or so, you had the Branham family in the, I think I mentioned this the last episode, Ordinary People organization, where you had Branham's two sons, and you had T.L. Osborne and Kenneth Hagin Ministries joining together for some collaboration. We don't know what it was, but we see two organizations founded. So as you see the message trying to get in bed with this organization, you also see all these connections to Word of Faith Prosperity Gospel, and they're connected directly to William Branham's daughter. So all of these connections, you can't say where it went because all of it just kind of dissipated. But you can look at it, you can kind of piece together what might have happened had it all worked out. And the shape of the charismatic movement after the 80s would have looked entirely different had the Branhams got their hands on it.
You said something there that's just fascinating. I mean, really struck me, John. So I knew Gerald Lee Walker was on the board of directors of the Full Gospel Businessmen, but I didn't realize he was the treasurer, you know, until you brought, you know, you kind of showed that article there. That is fascinating. So John, when all the stuff went down with Sarah Branham, I have a whole section in my book on this. And for our friends out there, my church served as the mediator between Sarah Branham and the rest of her family, okay? I have all of the legal documents that Gerald Walker created. I have copies of everything. And William Branham, or rather Raymond Jackson, our pastor, secretly loved to secretly record things. John, I have copies of the recordings of Raymond Jackson with George Smith and Rebecca Smith and Billy Paul Branham and Sarah Branham through that whole period as he mediated that whole thing. Now, did they know he was making those recordings? I don't know. But John, I know everything about all of that stuff, okay? Like, we can try and get there and talk about some of that stuff. But yeah, there's some really, really, really ugly stuff that happened there. And then Sarah Branham disappeared. Yeah, and Gerald Lee Walker was her lawyer through it. So anyways, I didn't realize that Gerald Lee Walker was treasurer. So what that tells me, John, this is so interesting, is that from the time that the Full Gospel Businessman was founded into, 1985, 86, 87, roughly, the majority of those years, if not all of those years, the treasurer of the Full Gospel Businessman International was a member of the Message.
Yes.
Okay. It was absolutely through the 60s, up and through the 50s and 60s he was, absolutely through the 70s he was, and quite possibly, John, I mean, I would want to go back and look and see if there was a gap between Carl Williams and Gerald Lee Walker as treasurer. But if it went straight from Carl Williams to Gerald Lee Walker, the treasurer of the Full Gospel Businessman was a Message follower into the middle, late 1980s, John.
Mind blown.
All right, everybody. Look, I mean, we're not making this stuff up. Okay. It's crazy, right? And yeah. This is absolutely how money is flowing. I know this is how money is flowing. It's not the only way. And they're voting it. I'm not even saying it's like under the table or anything nefarious. It's all legit, I think, what's going on. But the board of directors and everything approves it all out. The treasurer's got influence, right? I mean, it's happening, right? I mean, if you are running an organization, you think about this. I'm running an organization and I say, I want to channel $1 million to mission work this year. Treasurer, please channel this money to mission work. And who gets to pick the mission work they're going to sponsor, right? You just think about this.
Yeah.
Okay?
It's a big deal. The connections to the Full Gospel Businessman are mind-boggling. I baited the hook at the very beginning of this episode, if you didn't catch it, but talking about it was also connected to O.J. Simpson. If you read the book, The Kardashians, and you understand what it is that they're talking about, it's kind of crazy. They do mention the Full Gospel Businessman in that book, but the connection to O.J., so, for example, Dima Shakarian was the founder of Full Gospel Businessmen. His son, was it Richard Shakarian? I think he became the international president, something like this. His daughter, Denise Shakarian, she was for a period of time engaged to Robert Kardashian, who became famous during the OJ trial. Robert Kardashian, who was descended, I can't remember how many levels descended from Tatos, the sponsor of all of this. He's the one that allegedly led OJ to become a Christian and took him to his first Bible study, etc. So you've got all of these connections. It's just so weird. And Denise Shakarian, so the movie Gone in 60 Seconds, Denise Shakarian, who is deeply embedded into this thing, right? Her father's head of the Full Gospel Businessman. She was one of the producers of the Gone in 60 Seconds movie with Nicolas Cage. And there's some tie. I think it's her husband's father, or maybe her husband, produced the 1970s movie Gone in 60 Seconds, or acted in it, something like this. You can find most of that information's in the Kardashians book. But the connections are just mind-boggling to both entertainment, religion, money, finances, and scandals, which we're going to get into later.
Oh my goodness, John. So there's some other important things I think I'd like to point out about the Full Gospel Businessman too, because as you come into the late 60s and into the 70s, they're sponsoring a lot of stuff, lots and lots of money. I mean, I would say probably in today's money, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, were being sponsored and flowing through the Full Gospel Businessman. And the things that they were sponsoring were quite vast, quite vast. And through that period of time, right? Yep, they were given endowments to start message churches. Yes, some of their mission money was being directed to message missionaries that were spreading the message in Africa and South America and the Philippines and different places. That was happening. But they're also helping launch televangelism, okay? So they're also paying for a TV program lineup. And they started to develop this TV program lineup in 1968. So we're 1968, we're 2-3 years after William Branham has died. And Pat Robertson came into contact with all these guys in, I want to say 1956, 1957, something like that, and developed a relationship with them. And he started the Christian Broadcasting Network. And when he did, it was a single kind of a podunk TV station, okay, when this thing started out. But the Full Gospel Businessmen, when they got involved in it, they financed a television lineup. And it was their financial support, I'll say, that really helped push the CBN network over the line and into its path to become a powerhouse. And so as they financed that TV lineup starting in 1968, you know, 2.5, 3 years after William Branham has died, we know we've said before, almost certainly William Branham would have been in those TV slots if he had lived. But instead, we do see Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts would have been in the TV slots one way or the other, for sure, because he was like right there with William Branham, neck and neck with these guys. But what we see happening is the slots that William Branham filled as keynote speaker at their conventions, after he died, you get three guys who take over those slots for the Full Gospel Businessman. Tommy Osborne, Derek Prince, and Kenneth Hagin. Those three guys take over the key speaking slots at their conventions that William Branham previously filled. Those three guys had already been at their conventions. They had more or less been the junior people next to William Branham at those conventions. Like Derek Prince would warm up the crowd and introduce William Branham. Kenneth Hagin would prophesy and get the people, you know, all excited and turn it over to William Branham, right? Tommy Osborne, you know, same. It was all the same thing. They were like the introductory acts to William Branham, who then was the main act at the Full Gospel Businessman shows. And so when William Branham dies, they get his slots in the, you know, they basically get promoted up to the senior speaking role now. And the same thing we see happens when they launch their TV lineup. Those same three guys, Kenneth Hagin, Derek Prince, and Tommy Osborne, end up into these television slots that they're funding on the CBM network. And this is what does a whole lot to launch those three men into popularity. And so that's happening right in this same window of time, right? 68, 69, right at the same time that these schisms and stuff we're talking about are happening in the message. So just, it's an interesting time frame. And it's also interesting just to kind of realize it's some of the same people financing both sides of what we're talking about here.
And the irony of all of this is I grew up with men preaching who knew this history. They all knew it. Many of them were old enough. They were there when all of this was happening, when all of this was being set up. And they preached against the televangelists and the charismatics, just railing them, saying things that, you know, we had a prophet for this age and he would have never agreed with all of this. And they're not telling the people who are sitting in the pews listening to this nonsense that it was literally Branham who created all of this. And they know it. Some of them were there. Some of them watched this stuff. But they're preaching it in an attempt to turn this away and further isolate these people away from all of the rest of Christianity. That's how bad and weird this gets. But these men were there. They knew it. And you look at, you mentioned Kenneth Hagin. I still get hate mail from people who are, I guess you'd call them in the Kenneth Hagin cult. I don't know how you would say this, but they so avidly defend Kenneth Hagin and say he was never part of this. Kenneth Hagin was right there, man. He was right there.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Word of Faith is a direct cousin of the message. And yeah, the Word of Faith movement, it's a cult, ladies and gentlemen. A run from your life from them, too. Anyway, you know, kind of coming back to the message here. I mean, you're right, John. And of course, William Branham would have did it. Okay, we have two videos of William Branham, 20th Century Prophet and Deep Calls the Deep. We have two motion picture videos of William Branham. Who made, paid for, and funded those videos? The Full Gospel Businessman. Okay. All right. And when William Branham, so we know they basically buried those videos when William Branham died. Now, why did they bury them? They buried them because Carol Ruth Strubler died. The little girl he said was healed died 2 weeks later. Yeah. And was in the news. So they buried him when he was, yeah, they buried him. And when we talk about Perry Green, we'll talk about this some more. But Perry Green, who was a Full Gospel Businessman, got those out of the archives from Full Gospel Businessmen after William Branham died and starts using that. That's how the message community gets them, right? They made it. Carol Ruth Strubler died. They buried it. Years go by. People forget. And Perry Green pulls it out of the Full Gospel Businessmen archives and, hey, look, we've got these videos of William Branham healing Carol Ruth Strubler. Praise the Lord. Look at how that little girl was healed. these people were scumbags, John. I mean, what a dirtbag would do a thing like that. I'll tell you the dirtbag's name when we get to those episodes. But anyways, this is William Branham absolutely would have went along with going on television. He already was. The Full Gospel Businessmen were already paying for it, right? And you want my opinion? The thing that derailed William Branham from going to television faster than he did was the fact that Carol Ruth Strubler died in the second video he recorded and was in the newspapers. That is my explanation as to why he didn't go into TV to begin with. But yeah, he definitely would have ended up there before it was all said and done. So I don't know, John, there's so much more we could say about the connection to the Full Gospel Businessman. I'm sure we will say a lot more through our next episodes, as we continue to look at the post-Branham years. But I felt like we needed at this stage to just really bring it home for our listeners that senior leaders in the Full Gospel Businessman were message followers, right? Not to say that the Full Gospel Businessman was the message or controlled by the message. It was a complementary group. They had a lot of the same ideology, overlapping ideology in a lot of ways. But the people who were in the message, who were in the senior post of the Full Gospel Businessman, were absolutely in a position to help direct the finances of that organization to support the message in those critical years after William Branham died, just as they had been doing before he died. And that is part of what helps explains how the message was able to recover and enter into explosive growth by the early 1970s.
Yeah, and you mentioned Carol Ruth Strubler. I was not aware that she had died until you had shared that with me. But interestingly, after you had shared that with me, it was maybe a year later, I came in contact with an old timer who was around during all of these meetings, and he told me that he was aware, and many people were aware, that this girl died. And it was mind-boggling. Like, it was shaking to them. They were completely shaken because of this fact. And it's hard to believe how much has been covered up. Not only are they covering up William Branham's failures and making this theatrical religion, they're failing to mention all of these connections. So whenever the New Apostolic Reformation mentions William Branham and his great healing ministry that never failed and his prophecies that were fully accurate, many of these men and women are fully aware that that is not the case. But in theater, it makes for a better story. So they're basically just painting the picture that all of this is this wonderful movement that has no flaws, and they're taking all the flaws and sweeping them under the rug. So as you get further in this series, which we're going to expose this, you're going to begin to realize that all of the things that are being said about this movement and how it developed, all of it is based off of things that they're concealing from the people. And, I could go on and on about all of the cover-ups, but we'll save it for the next episode, Charles. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and christiangospelchurch.org. For more about the history of William Branham and the healing revivals, read Come Out of Her, My People, available on Amazon and Kindle. And for more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.